Because we're looking for great talent and great ideas, IP sits front and center, both what we're looking at and what we hope to help the developer succeed in.
Today, we make IP your business. It's a podcast that explores how intellectual property positions a company to succeed or stumble. I'm Allison Mages, head of the IP commercialization section at the World Intellectual Property Organization. We call this season Video Game Development, a quest for IP. Join our adventure through 5 levels of game development where you'll hear from industry experts about how these rights will help your business level up or reach game over.
Hi, I'm Michaela Mantegna, a video game researcher at the Verma Klein Center at Harvard, and I will be this season co-host. We are on level 3, IP in the launch phase. Today, we dive into the process of launching a game, including managing IP, sometimes on a global scale. We'll also take a closer look at building video game brands that get the attention of the market. In short, we will hear why IP matters from video game giant Tencent. Our guest today is Yan Pern. Yan is senior legal counsel at Tencent. She looks after legal issues for the global games business where international games are developed and published outside of mainland China. Welcome, Yan. It's a pleasure to have you.
Great to be here.
So just to break the ice, how did you start in the video game industry?
Yeah, I was really lucky. My start in the video games industry was esports. This is 2014. I had just graduated law school and League of Legends was exploding in popularity. So for esports, it was the perfect culmination of my interests and background. I'll probably go into a little bit more later as well, but technology, I have a biotech background, entertainment. I had worked on and off screen in TV and radio. It's a truly global business. My life, I had weaved back and forth between US and Taiwan. But not only that, I fell into this area that touched upon all of my interests, but it was also this new frontier. It was cutting edge. It was being at the starting line of a new industry, a new legal field. I don't know how many, law school students, newly grads get that opportunity, but I really thrived in kind of this wild, wild west, I guess, landscape. And I think, esports, video games, it continues to be so just because of so much innovation and creativity. And I think like you guys working kind of in IP, being able to devote my legal expertise into something that's ultimately about creativity and innovation, I think that's just really special.
That's awesome, Yana. And I think, it's so cool to be on that cutting edge and being able to figure things out from the ground up as we go. So one question I always ask, when it comes to intellectual property, was it on purpose or by accident that you ended up doing IP stuff?
Another happy accident, kind of story of my life. I mean, I had always really loved innovation, even before I knew there was this whole system called IP. One of them was IP law and, it was love at first sight. I couldn't believe there was this whole legal system devoted to defining, protecting, encouraging, all kinds of innovation. At that time, patent law, I think, was particularly interesting and captivating for me. Innovation is important, but it's not until IP law that it kind of explicitly tells you innovation is just as valuable as any other tangible asset.
Going a bit more about your work, Tencent is a force of nature in the video game industry. For those people who may not know, how is Tencent related to video games? What would you say makes Tencent special?
If I had to summarize it under one reason, I would say that Tencent has been able to make and invest in great games by centering around this corporate philosophy of bringing value to the users and technology for good. I think that's driven the company since it was small and even so now when it's a giant. What makes Tencent so special today, I think, is in part of this kind of breadth and depth. Tencent is so much more than a gaming company. Gaming is kind of one of its 7 businesses. It's really a world kind of leading technology company creating valuable IP and innovative products, in markets around the globe. We're not focused in, only established markets like EU, Canada, US, but also in markets like South America, Africa, and West Asia. So because Tencent, I think, is not limited by geography or these specific products or services, we can really look at bringing value to users and tech for good from a more diverse and holistic approach. And that's why we want to be a good partner for the industry as a whole. And I think that's the part that really makes Tencent special. We'll probably go through some of these later, but just to really briefly highlight three maybe manifestations of bringing value to the users. The first is diversity. Great games should bring meaningful connections to players. To do this, we really need to reflect more of the world, the people around us. Tencent does that by investing in game companies around the world, Canada, Sweden, Czech Republic, Japan, New Zealand, Brazil, Uruguay. We do this because we want to tell the stories that might be overlooked and create online spaces that foster that belonging and sense of community. A couple of stats that I had looked up, you know, in preparation for this interview, in 100 top games released over the past 5 years that had preset or author characters, so almost 80% of the main protagonists in games were male, only 21% were female, even though 45% of gamers are women. 54% of main characters are white, even though 29% of gamers are people of color. And then if we look at the segment of main characters in games who are female and non-white, that's, you know, down to 8.3%. So I think creating kind of diverse characters in video games is something that both our homegrown studios like Timmy Montreal, as well as our investee studios, are actively focusing on.
Let's talk a little bit about IP. So when you're launching a game, what issues are you thinking about when it comes to IP?
So all of the above. Really at the launch stage, and maybe we can also go a little bit before launch. So I think harping on the vertical slice stage and why that sticks out or is important is because I think that's kind of when legal formally gets involved. There's enough of a functional game, you know, you can see the quality, you can see the features and functions kind of working correctly. If the team hasn't kind of already begun to talk to us beforehand, I think that's when we come in and we say, hey, you know, have you thought about what your game title is? These things need to be cleared. These things need to be protected. So we need some bandwidth. So we kind of walk them through. We've done a really good job of creating this systematic, methodical game compliance review process. And so we're kind of able to walk them through, especially for IP, the review dimensions kind of include patents, trademarks, copyright, open source software, different copyright or legal notices. We're able to kind of walk them through that, have them understand the importance. We have guidelines for each, questionnaires so that they can easily fill it out. We can easily assess. Importantly as well, because this is all available to them and we do have regular trainings, I think the teams are able to think about this and be cognizant of respecting other people's IPs, of how to protect their own IP. Because the creators, you know, there's only so much me as a lawyer can do. And there's only so many games that I can play. But I think these developers and creators, they know the industry in and out. They're kind of the front lines. And so if they feel like, hey, I think I've created something new, you know, I've solved latency in a way that I haven't seen other video games do, there's a good chance they're right. And maybe there's a, you know, patentable invention there. With copyright, they know exactly if they've added a particular building or painting that reflects a real-world item on purpose to kind of invoke that city, or if, you know, a character skin was inspired or borrowed from something else, maybe, you know, the latest fashion or a movie star that I may not know of, either because I don't dabble in that area, or maybe it's in a different market that I'm not familiar with. And so I think really arming the developers and creators with these IP concepts early on makes my life so much easier. And so when we get to reviewing the actual IP issues before launch, you know, before, let's say, even beta testing, it's a lot easier to work with the developers and let them know why we're suggesting certain changes or why we're seeing certain risks.
And another thing that I pick up from what you were saying that's really important is that the training, because one of the things you were saying that makes your job easier at launch is like that you have like this whole path of people like reviewing and understanding and learning to raise their own red flags as a developer when using an IP asset is allowed and why not. And I think this is the process in a big company, but what advice can you tell to like smaller teams that are trying to do this in an independent studio or they are just starting? Because I know a lot of video game developers that generally think that they are doing an homage by including like this little item that resembles another people's IP, and they don't realize that they are kind of infringing. So what can you say to the studios that doesn't have like that legal team or support?
Yeah, it's always hard because, you know, sometimes the go-to advice is like, well, you know, talk to a lawyer, but obviously that's not available, right, to everyone. And sometimes I think you don't necessarily have to, going back to that, maybe that piece of advice, you don't actually have to hire a lawyer. I think, you know, so many attorneys are happy to talk about IP and innovation and protection. And so sometimes really just reaching out, talking to a lawyer. There's a bunch on Twitter, on Reddit. If you're truly, really small, but you do have the genuine interest and intent to really level up your IP, to make a shameless plug for WIPO, you know, I think WIPO has a lot of great resources on the website. And so I think that's a good place to start. Anytime there's something I don't understand or want to understand more, oftentimes I go to YouTube and I type in, you know, some key phrases and have someone lecturing me about it. So I think the information is out there. There might be almost sometimes too much, but I think taking that initiative and just getting started, just looking at what is the difference between patents and copyrights and trademarks, and how does that apply to the different aspects of your video game? And as you're creating it, what do you think is the most important? What do you think you have the bandwidth to focus on now? I think just getting started is already a huge step. Generally, I think no matter which platform you launch, or even if it's cross-platform, I think the considerations that you have, that tagline of IP as soon as possible, still applies.
I also was thinking about different platforms, different markets, and also different countries. So the rules and regulations and rights change from one place to another. And I used to joke about in video game development, you have localization. And I used to show that localization is like having to adapt your game to the different laws and regulations around the world is also an issue. But can you talk a little to our audience about how the local nature of IP is playing a role in how you launch a game and internationally?
Because of the volume that we have, what we try to do oftentimes is find the lowest common denominator, which is oftentimes the strictest law, or maybe we have a couple of groupings of strict law. So just taking an example of, let's say, US trademarks. So if the standard opposition is 30 days, whereas for EU and China, those opposition periods are 3 months. Therefore, what we do is we say, okay, well, let's take the longer, you know, 3 months, encourage our teams to submit their trademark materials, think about game titles and currency names and anything else they have as early as possible so we can really push up those timelines and meet that common denominator. Other times where it makes sense, maybe there's, you know, a variation. So trademark applications in China are very likely to be rejected on the grounds of similarity with another registered mark. Whereas in the US, there's a slightly higher standard of, you know, it's rejected if the other registered mark presents a likelihood of confusion. So similar, okay, but, you know, is it confusing? Here, we can either say, hey, product team, let's meet the higher standard and find something that's nothing similar to the currently registered mark in China. Or we can say, you know, hey, maybe the markets are different. Sometimes in China, you know, there's a different game name for a different version, or maybe they use the Chinese characters mark. And so in this case, it's okay to bifurcate. So I think being able to detect when to kind of group them together and have it be more efficient, and when to really focus on the peculiarities of, you know, that local market. I think that's kind of where the judgment and experience, and, you know, I think there's so many different ways to do it depending on the company, you know, where you're at and where your priorities, you know, might be.
I love that you were talking about trademarks because this is a great segue for our next question, talking about a bit about branding and how do you choose the name of the game. And you already said like IP as soon as possible, but when you should start like figuring out if the name for your game is going to work or if you need to change it, and also give like this little piece of advice as for the people that doesn't have the legal department. What are the first steps when you, hey, I have this great name for my game? It's like, what do you should do next?
So with respect to kind of the steps, you found a name that you think you like, you don't have a legal team. What can you kind of do on your own to get a sense of whether this name will cause you any problems? So for IP review, you can kind of think about it in two buckets. So the first one is kind of the clearance portion. Can I use this? If I use this, will I get a nasty gram from someone and I need to stop? The other is IP protection. So even though you can use it, would you be able to protect that to stop others from using it? So if you launch the game today, can someone tomorrow come out with a similar or same game? The easier one to first do is that clearance one. It's not super precise, but actually a really good kind of common sense check is to use Google search. Type in the name of your game, see what pops up. Is there another game that already has that name? What do people associate that word with? Is it kind of a common word? Is there other meanings? Just based on the Google search, you can kind of see what's out there. If you see a lot of different things or just things that kind of take away from the special shininess of what might be your game launch, highly recommend just to move on and think of something else. If there are no obvious blockers, then I think this is where you kind of conduct the more detailed search against all these different trademark databases to make sure that no one has come before you and actually already registered that name or has actually applied for that name. You know, if you're in the US, I think the USPTO has a great website. If you type in TESS test, that has the US trademark database. The search terms, I think, can be, you need a little getting used to, but it's all free. It's all very accessible. There are other databases as well. And again, plugging for WIPO, WIPO has a great resource called the Global Brand Database. And it kind of allows you to sift through multiple trademarks from all these different national and international databases. So it's definitely something you can do yourself. And if it comes up clear, you don't see any issues, then maybe it's safer to proceed.
Yeah, and I want to ask a question because I heard what might be a technical term or a Mortal Kombat reference, and I'm not sure which one. What is a knockout search?
So a knockout search is a very quick preliminary search. It's cheap, it's quick. You get a flavor of, are there similar marks in this region that you're looking at? Are they in the same industry, you know, of entertainment and goods? So we call it a knockout search just because it can quickly knock out any unviable kind of options.
You gave great advice talking about doing a Google search, but also you can go and see the social media handlers. If they are open for you, that's a good indicative that you have maybe something unique. Also, it's like if you register in that sense, the social media handlers for you, think in that same way about registering your mark, like not leave that to the last minute.
Yes, yes. Excellent, excellent point. When you asked me about all the different IP issues to consider before launch, the social media handles, especially this day and age, is really important. Your website URL, I think that's something that people forget as well. Even your app icon is something that you need to think about. And so I think all of these related elements outside of just your game are important to think about and to plan ahead.
So a lot of the studios that are listening, they would love to partner with someone like Tencent. So how does partnership work with small developers at Tencent?
So there's kind of three ways I think we approach our partnership. One is kind of the investment approach. So we invest in these talented companies because we think that, you know, not only will they benefit from our industry expertise, but that capital support will really allow them to scale up. We provide a lot of what I call, you know, wraparound services, marketing, technology and production, market analysis, esports integrations, other publishing capabilities so that the studio can really focus on what they do best, which is develop the game. They don't have to think about all these other things like legal, finance, all those things. They can really focus on what they'd like. So that's one partnership approach that we have. The other is kind of mobile and free to play expansion. Tencent's signature success has really come from developing mobile games, not only with other developers, but I think other publishers like Nintendo with Pokemon Unite, Activision with Call of Duty Mobile, Krafton with PUBG Mobile. Tencent has really become this trusted partner if you want to effectively, from a technical and business standpoint, transform your IP into the mobile platform. The last is Chinese version expansion. So again, I think Tencent has become a proven partner in China. If you want to have someone, you know, kind of establish and manage the Chinese version of your video game. So through these three ways, I think we partner with different developers, you know, depending on where their focus is and the support that they really want.
And again, how important is IP to these partnerships? Because what you've described is a lot of how do I expand my revenue generation using what I've already thought about and created through your company.
From the maybe developers' IP side, I think we're always looking out for great talent and great ideas. When you talk to the studio, you kind of do naturally get a sense of their approach to IP. And we understand, you know, kind of the sophistication with IP protection may vary. And so it's just one of the factors in our decision about whether to invest or partner. But I think at the very least, what the developer needs to think about is you need to ensure that you own that innovation, right? That you own that IP so that you do have something valuable that you can show to other people, that you can have other people help you develop. My recommendation would be focus on what are the capabilities that you have that kind of sets you apart from others. So is your IP and innovation focused on a great story, innovative gameplay, or do you have this next generation technology that can connect players around the world? Are you able to create more realistic, cinematic, and immersive experiences? Or are you exploring new frontiers like audio, AI, VR to advance kind of the art and science of gaming? I think cross-platform play and release is a trend that's coming up. And so maybe you have these amazing cross-platform mechanics so that someone on console can seamlessly play with someone on mobile and have the same experience. Even things that are not focused truly on kind of game development, but instead maybe you have data analytic technology that can identify the performance of game marketing or game conversions or influencer marketing. Or maybe you have this unique way to engage with your local market, get feedback, and now you're able to create really great ongoing kind of DLC and content. I think because we're looking for great talent and great ideas, IP sits front and center, both what we're looking at and what we hope to help the developer succeed in.
Awesome. So I think we're sort of towards the end of our interview here, Yen. And so I wanted to close out and ask, if you put yourself in the shoes of a small developer, what's one piece of advice you would give them to level up their IP?
I think the advice would be just start. Don't be scared. It can be really daunting. Just get started and then slowly build and perfect it from there. For example, today your checklist can be as simple as a table with two columns. You know, we talked about IP, you can think about in IP clearance. So that'll be your first column. And then you can also think about it in IP protection. And then for the rows for your table, you can have one row for patents, one row for copyright, one row for trademark, maybe trade secrets. And if you're, you know, you're getting super fancy, you know, maybe something like rights of publicity. At the start of your game, think about these issues. If you're cognizant of them, you'll be mindful and you won't overlook something. Again, you know, maybe a vertical slice is when you feel ready to really roll up your sleeves and think about IP issues. But just go through this checklist and start writing down, okay, for, you know, let's say trademarks. Have I done the clearance? What have I found? Things look good. Now I want to protect it. Where do I go? Maybe jot down notes about Madrid, or maybe you want to file in the US first. Keep notes and slowly your simple table will kind of grow into what we have now at Tencent, which is a multi-step, multi-review compliance process and strategy.
That's fantastic advice. And thank you so much, Shen, for joining us today and sharing these thoughts on IP, games, and cats as well for today. And I think that our audience is going to take a lot of golden nuggets of information from this. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing all these thoughts.
So what does it take to launch a game from an IP perspective? Pulling it all together with us is Professor Gaetano D'Amida in his Power Up introduction.
So you finally reached the launch phase. Congratulations. Now it is time to finalize your IP strategy and clear and correct any mistake in precision and whatever you've been postponing in order to avoid discussing the IP legal issues. You need to run a compliance review in order to be sure that you have all the IP license you need and you have registered all the IP you want. If you follow the previous episode, you are already a step ahead, but you will still need to make an asset-by-asset assessment to determine the risk that might be involved in the launch of your video game. Starting from the beginning, do you have all the proper license for all the software used in the creation of your video game? Did you use any open source software? Did you use any IP from third parties? Did you use real person and objects such as architectural historical building? At this stage, all your assets should be finalized. So you will have two key objectives for launch. First, you want to get the strong possible protection for your IP. And secondly, you want to make sure that you have all the permission to use IP that belongs to others before including them in your video game. Remember the compliance and clearance process. When it comes to compliance, a lot of the issue will not be straightforward or black and white, and you will need to conduct a risk assessment and determine whether or not it's more appropriate to apply for a license or something else. Having a clear table of assets, their IP, the risk assessment could be very useful, as well as having had regular IP audits. We'll get back to this next time. At this stage, you will have to take a lot of business decisions. For instance, do you know in which countries you want to distribute your game and in which countries your competitors are? Because this will determine where to focus the most for both compliance and for protection. Basically, where do you want to register your trademark and design? When it comes to copyright, in some countries such as the US, there is a registration system and you want to register your copyright because this will strengthen your position in the unlucky case of someone infringing your right. But you do have a limited budget. Beyond the name and the company and the title of the video game, what do you want to register and where? You have to make a full economic assessment of the advantages of registering trademark, design, and copyright when available, or applying for a patent where they are more important to you. Registering everything everywhere might be too expensive, time-consuming, and resources are not infinite. For instance, the common favorite countries for registration for trademark are the big markets, the US, the EU, the UK, China, and the countries where potentially infringements are more likely to occur. This process might look tricky and time-consuming, and it is. Likely, there is a lot of information out there, and you shouldn't be afraid to ask questions and to ask for help. I strongly suggest having legal counsel, as any mistake can be extremely costly or even kill the project. That's all for your episode. See you next time.
And that's a wrap for Level 3. Stay tuned for the next episode of Video Game Development, A Quest for IP. We're going to talk about the role of IP in acquisitions and investments with the CEO of Green Horse Games from Romania, which was recently acquired by Miniclip in one of the biggest transactions in the European gaming industry.
Thanks for listening to Make IP Your Business. This podcast is brought to you by WIPO, the UN agency for IP that enables innovation and creativity for everyone, everywhere. You can find all the episodes, download the power-ups, and join the community on our website. Check out the show notes for the links. See you on the next level.